All right, we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, nine lines from the end of the narrowest lines. The line begins, 10 lines rather, actually. The line begins Dar Isa. We started talking about, the Mishnah had said that there was various cases where the knas, where the special rules for onus and mefata don't apply. Basically, in the first half of the Mishnah, there are cases where we have no particular reason to think that the woman is still a basula, because those rules apply only when she's a naira basula, as it says in the Pesukim, what we're going to learn later in the Perek, and we've learned before, that according to the Chachamim, also when she's a ktana, but in any case, everybody agrees she has to be a basula in order for the knas to be in effect. So the Mishnah had mentioned, among others, a giyuris, and so the Mishnah had mentioned, among others, a shvuya, a woman who had been taken captive by the goyim, whereas was discussed at great length in the previous perek, you have the concern that she may have been raped by them, and therefore that she's no longer a basula. So now we said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, shvuya who was redeemed, harehi b'kdushasa, she still has her full kedusha of before, meaning that if she's a bas koyin, she would still be able to continue to eat truma. We're not concerned about the possibility that she was raped by somebody who was also to have relations with her, and therefore she still has the full kedusha of a bas koyin. So we discussed that Rabbi Yehuda might be, so Rabba had said that Rabbi Yehuda might agree in principle that there is the concern that she's lost her basulim, and therefore he would basically agree with many of the dinim that we learned in the previous perek on the subject, but here we would say he doesn't want her to lose the possibility of knas, because in case somebody else, in case a yid later on is ma'anas or mafat to her, we don't want the guy to get off scot-free. So for that purpose only, maybe we'll assume that she is in fact still a basula. So in other words, so we had two possibilities. We had Rabbi Yochanan saying that Rabbi Yehuda is saying in general that across the board, we consider her to still have her kedusha of kohona. And we have Rabbi saying that not necessarily, maybe Rabbi Yehuda says it only in this one case of onus and mefateh. So the Gemara says, Omalei Abaya. So Abaya says to Rabbi, the time of Rabbi Yehuda hocha shalo yehi choyte niskohu. So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda's reason over here is based only on the concept of lo yehi choyte nisker. In other words, that we did that little piece yesterday at the end, but I guess we may as well repeat it. We're really holding the sovereign of Yehuda Victor Shasa Kaima a few lines down. But anyway, so you know what? Okay, fine. Let's just recap that part. So Rabbi Yehuda, so Abaya says, how could you say that Rabbi Yehuda is saying Shaloyeh Chotiniska v'hatanya Rabbi Yehuda om Shvuya shenishpes harei b'kdusha? So doesn't a Braisa say that Rabbi Yehuda says that a Shvuya who was redeemed, who was captured, still retains her kedusha not only as far as onus and mafata, but even as far as the ksuba. Afil bas esa shonim ksubasa masayim, that even if she's 10 years old, meaning far older than the age at which her basulim will no longer grow back. We said in the previous mission and in this mission that would be 3 years old. Then nevertheless, ksubasa masayim, the ksuba is still 200. V'hasamai shalo yehi chote niska yitha. There's no shalo yehi chote niska. There's no chote involved in her getting married. And we're still saying that Rabbi Yehuda is considering her to be a full basula. Otherwise, you should say it's a ksuba of only 100. And the answer is Hasanami. There also, you could say, in a certain sense, there's a certain degree of lo yehi chote niska, in the sense, Duma Mimni Ivloi Nasvila. If we downgrade her ksuba to 100, then, in other words, so you're saying that in effect that we're saying she has a chazaka, that she has had relations, then a regular Yisrael may not, even a Yisrael who's allowed to marry her, may not want to. He may say, why should I bother? I can marry a Bsula instead. He may be repulsed by the idea that we're assuming that she was forced to have relations with a goy. Whatever the case, so Rabbi Yehuda might still say that we're going to keep her ksuba at 200. Just that itself will improve her marriage prospects, that it tells people that there's a good chance she's still a basula. So we could say, as far as that, and as far as onus and mafata, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying we still consider her a basula, but maybe not for other purposes. Okay, Now, the Sogod of Yehuda B'Kedushos HaKaima, now the question becomes the other way around. Are you telling me, and this question would really be more according to Rabbi Yechanan, are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds she still has her full Kedusha of Kohona, that we're not so concerned that the goy may have forced her to have relations with him? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, ha'poides ha'shvuya yise'ena, if a man, even a kohen, redeems a shvuya yise'ena, then afterwards he's allowed to marry her. So poida means, in other words, that he poshut paid out money to the goyim to free her from captivity. Made ba, but if he's one of the people who gives edus on her, if he's one of the people who gives edus on her lo yise'ena, then he's not allowed to give edus on her. Now it sounds like we're saying if he did both, he redeemed her, and now he's coming to Beis Din and saying, you should know I was around at the time and I know that she wasn't violated by the goyim. So we're going to see in a second that's not what the braisa means, but that's what it sounds like. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a ben kach or ben kach lo yisena, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying either way he's not allowed to marry her. So before we get to Rabbi Yehuda, before we get to understanding Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, first we need to understand the opinion of the Chachamim. Hagufa kashi, you seem to have a contradiction in what the Chachamim themselves are saying. Amrit hapoides hashvoya yisena. First you're saying he redeems her, then he's allowed to marry her. In other words, that once he redeemed her, then we're not concerned that maybe she was raped. V'hodatonim made ba lo yisena. Then it's saying if he's made on her, which again sounds like the same person who redeemed her is now coming to testify in Beis Din lo yisena. Then all of a sudden we're saying he can't marry her. What's the logic? B'shem made ba lo yisena. Because he comes and says edus on her, therefore that makes things worse, and now he can't marry her. What's the logic? And the answer is holei kasha. That part is not. Or Tosfos says the question is really it sounds like if he redeems her and doesn't say edus about her, then he's fine. But if he redeems her and says edus about her, then it's no good. What's the logic? So the answer is holei kasha. That's not a problem. Hafu kamar, because what the chachamim in the braisa mean is hapodes hashvuya umeyid bo yisena, means just the opposite. If he does both. He redeems her. He pays money to the goyim to get her to buy her freedom. And afterwards, he goes and says edus on her that they hadn't touched her while she was with them. Then he would be allowed to marry her. But made bakidi. But if he marries her, but if he says edus for free, not having put his money where his mouth is, lo yisena, then he wouldn't be allowed to marry her, because then we're concerned that maybe. Then we're concerned maybe that he's testifying falsely, that he's saying, he's coming and telling us that she wasn't raped, because he's thinking to himself, I'm a Kohen, I would like to marry her. If I don't tell Beis Din that, they're not going to allow me to marry her. So therefore he may be saying that falsely, or maybe not even blatantly falsely. It may not even be that he knows for a fact he's lying. It may be more along the lines of like he's assuming. Whatever the case, as we'll see in a couple of lines in the Gemara, it's different if he paid money for her. But we could say the Chachamim are saying that if he only gives edus, then he can't marry her. Okay, mekomokum kasha l'Rabbi Yehuda. Still though, the question is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that either way lo yisena, implying Rabbi Yehuda takes it as a given that she may well have been raped by the goyim while she was in captivity. So, yet in our Mishnah, he's saying that she still has her Kedusha, and Rabbi Yochanan understood that to mean across the board, that Rabbi Yehuda would disagree with the whole concept of Shvuya discussed in the previous Perek and would say that it's fine, he would say, like we said in the Gemara yesterday, like Rabbi Dosa, that the likelihood is that the Goyim at most molested her, but not that it actually got to the level of rape. So what is it? What does Rabbi Yehuda hold? So the answer is, Amar Papa Emer, Rabbi Yehuda Emer Ben Kacha Ben Kach Yise'ena. So the Papa says, okay, you may have to change the wording of the Braisa. Say that Rabbi Yehuda says, either way, whether he actually paid money for her or whether he just gave edus for her, either way, he is allowed to marry her. So Rabbi Yehuda's opinion would be consistent to points of Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Huna, Bredi Rav Yeshua, Amar La'olam Kid Katani. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shua says you don't need that. You could say the Braisa remains as written, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying either way he can't marry her. I then how does that fit with his opinion in our Mishnah? Because the Rabbi Yehuda, the Divrayim Drabbanan. Because Rabbi Yehuda is not telling us his own opinion on the subject. He's arguing with the Chachamim and telling us what he thinks they should hold. He's saying, "Ledidi ben kach ben kach yisena." As far as I'm concerned, either way, I hold. Let's say again, we're following Rabbi Yochanan's understanding that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, "I don't believe that the goyim raped her at all. I believe, like Rabbi Doi said, the maximum they may have done is a miyachlo ben dadeha, and therefore there's no reason to ask her anyway." So as far as I'm concerned, the Kohen could marry her anyway. Elo l'didchu, but according to you, Chachamim, who are concerned that the Goyim may have raped her, ben kach ben kach lo yisa'en mi bo'ilai, then according to you, it should be that either way he can't marry her. Why are you distinguishing between whether he paid money for her or not? V'rabbanon, so what are the Chachamim answer to that? They answer the difference is Akoides Hashruya who made ba. The difference is if he actually paid money for her and afterwards he's giving Eidos that in fact she wasn't harmed by the Goyim, Yisa'ena, the reason why we allow her to marry, the reason why we allow him to marry her, even though he's a Kohen, Loy Shodi Inish Zuzi Bichdi, because we can assume that a person is not going to throw away his money for nothing. Why would he, Davka, be putting in all the money to do Pidyon Shvuyim? Of course, I mean, Pidyon Shvuyim is a big mitzvah, but still, if it wasn't that he has the possibility of marrying her, he might not have paid as much. He might have just gone and raised money from other people rather than giving it all out of pocket. So therefore, so there's a high likelihood that in fact he is telling the truth, and that in fact that she wasn't raped. Which the Taz points out. I mean, it's in effect what we're saying is, as far as his Eidos, we're going to discount that. We're going to say that his Eidos may not be true either way. But it's not when we say that he's not going to throw away his money. The point is, after all, he has no way of knowing what happens if afterwards, when he claims that she wasn't raped, she says she comes in front of Beis Din and says, "Actually, I'm sorry to tell you, I was." Then for sure he's thrown away his money, and then then it comes out that all the money he spent on her in order to be able to marry her is not going to work out because he's a Kohen and he's not allowed to marry her. So therefore, when he's putting his money where his mouth is, then there's a much higher likelihood that he knows that that's not going to be a concern, that she's going to admit that she's going to admit to it, and therefore that makes it much more likely that what he's saying is true after all. On the other hand, made ba kadi. But if he's saying Eidos without having paid money for her, lo yisana, then we're saying you shouldn't marry her. Shema ain of nasan ba, because after all, he may have set his eyes on her. He may be lying, or at least bending the truth or whatever, in order to be able to marry this girl. And he being a Koyan, if she was in fact raped by the Goyim, he would be also to do that. So therefore, since there's no money involved, then basically he has nothing to lose, because what's the worst that could happen? She could contradict him. Okay, so the Beis Din is not going to say that he's an out and out liar. They're going to say, okay, you know, you weren't there 24/7. You don't know everything that happens. She, of course, knows much better what happened to herself. So therefore, there's no incentive for him to necessarily be telling the truth, and therefore we have to be concerned that maybe in fact he's not. That is why the Chachamim, so Rabbi Yehuda is telling the Chachamim, you seem to be inconsistent. The Chachamim would answer Rabbi Yehuda that in fact there's a special reason why, if he actually paid money for her, why we should believe him versus if he didn't. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Huna Bered Rabbi Yeshua is saying, the point is that we don't have to correct the text of the Braisa. We can in fact say that Rabbi Yehuda would say that either way he's allowed to marry her. He wouldn't hold that distinction between whether he paid or not, and that would be consistent with Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Mishnah, namely that when we say that she retains her kedusha means not only as far as the dinim of onus and mafata and marriage, like Rabbah says, but across the board, even as far as truma and even as far as other things. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rami led a papa bashmul led Rabbi Yosef. Here's another contradiction that Rabbi Papa Bashmul brings to Rabbi Yosef against Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, or again specifically according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. The sabr Rabbi Yehuda b'kedushas akaima. So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda holds that she still retains her kedusha, meaning, again, that we're not concerned that the goy may have raped her. V'hatanya, but we learn in a b'raisa. Now, the contradiction. We're gonna have to go through a few lines before we get. Meaning, the b'raisa is gonna start talking about a separate issue, and then we're gonna get back to something that bears on our situation over here. So the b'raisa says, "Hagiyodas chenis gaira v'ros adam." If a woman becomes a giyotis, and on that same day she has a flow of blood. Now, obviously she becomes a nida. And obviously before she became a Jew, the concept of nida on a daraisa level doesn't apply. The question is like this. When it comes to a Jewish woman who has a flow of blood that makes her nida, we say that Drabbanon talks about it at the beginning of Masech the Nida. There's a period of time before that when we consider that she may have been tameh. I think Gemara discusses over there various angles on why that is. One of them being the basic reason being because the blood makes her tameh as soon as it comes out of the uterus, but she's not going to realize it until it actually flows out of her body. So what happens is therefore, so you have a machlokas over there between Shammai and Hillel and the other chachamim. For how long beforehand do we assume that she may potentially have been tameh, which is relevant as far as if she's been handling truma or kodshim, will those retroactively be tameh? So the halacha is that what we do is we say it's 24 hours earlier or back to the last bedikah, whichever is less. So if she finds herself a nida at 12 p.m. on a Tuesday, then we say that any taharas that she handled from 12 p.m. on Monday are tomei misafik. But if sometime during that 24 hours that she had done a bedikah, then we say that back to the last bedikah. So she did the bedikah on Monday 5 p.m. Then fine, any taharas that she handled on Monday between 12 and 5 are fine, because obviously if she had become nida during that time, if blood had come out of the uterus, she would have caught it in a bedikah. But anything from 5 p.m. on Monday until 12 p.m. on Tuesday is going to be retroactively tough. So this is called me'es la'es and me'pkida la'pkida. So now the question is, this woman who became a giyotis, what are the rules as far as her? So if she toveled and became a giyotis at 12 o'clock, later on that same day at 5 o'clock, she finds that she's nigga. So now between 12 and 5, she was already a giyotis. She was able to handle taharas. What happens to those taharas? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Daya Shaita, Rabbi Yehuda says, in her case, we're going to say it's enough to declare her tamei from the time when she saw the blood. In other words, we're not going to be concerned as we would with a regular Jewish woman, that you have this me'es la'es and the p'kida l'p'kida thing. You're going to say that you're going to say that no, only the taharis that she touches from when she actually sees the flow of blood are going to be tamei. And the reason behind it is, Rashi explains, Rabbi Yehuda says like this, the whole concept of me'es la'es is based on that the blood may have started coming out of the uterus as much as 24 hours earlier, and she just didn't realize it until now because she doesn't realize it until it actually comes out of her body. Well, 24 hours ago, she was still a goita. So therefore, therefore the blood that came out of her, even if blood had started coming out of her uterus at that time, it still wouldn't make her tummy. And once we say that, then listen, when we can say that we apply the me'es la'es rule, the 24-hour rule, then we're going to do that. But over here, 24 hours ago, she was a goita. So therefore, we're not going to create a new gzera and say that, okay, it goes back to the time that she toveled. We're not going to do that. And therefore, we're not going to do m'pkida l'pkida either, because again, those two things go together. Let's draw out the scenario a little bit differently. We're not going to say that. So let's say at 12 o'clock she toveled and became a giyotis. At 3 o'clock she did a bedikah. At 5 o'clock she actually became nida. So in principle, then we might have said that maybe she's tomei l'mafreya back to 3 o'clock when she last did the bedikah. But no, Rashi says we're not going to do that because the fact is we can't apply the ma'es rule because 24 hours ago she was a goita. Therefore, we're not going to apply a partial 24 hour rule, and we're not going to apply the rule of mepkida l'pkida. And Tosfos points out, I mean, listen, obviously there's not even a reason to think that we would apply mass less. Obviously, it's pretty obvious that 24 hours ago she was a goita. Rabbi Yossi is in the Braise is going to disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. He's still not going to say that we would apply mass less, but he would say we would apply as much of it as possible. Namely, according to him, we would apply it back to 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock as the case may be. So Rabbi Yehuda says Dayashaita. Rabbi Yossi Emaharei Kacholam Nashim. Rabbi Yossi says no. We consider her like any other Jewish woman. Or Metame Me'es La'es Mepkida L'Pkida. So we apply the Me'es La'es rule, or we apply the Mepkida L'Pkida rule. So we say that if she toveled at 12 and there was no bedikah in between, and she saw a flow of blood at 5, we are going to say that Midrabanan all taris that she handled between 12 and 5 are going to be Tomei Misafik. And we are also going to say that if she did a bedikah at 3, then any taris that she handled between 3 and 5 are going to be tamei misafik. So he says that, so unlike Rabbi Yehuda, he's saying we're going to apply as much of the rule as possible, not 24 full hours, obviously, but whatever of the 24 hours or the time back to the last bedikah we could apply. So all of that is not really relevant to our sugya. We're just bringing that because that's the first half of a braisa, where the second half, the continuation of the braisa, is relevant over here and is what Rav Papa Bar Shmuel is bringing as a contradiction against Rav Yechman. So the braisa continues. Here's another point. When a woman becomes a geyoris, she would have to wait 3 months before she marries a Jew, in order, as we learned in Yevamos, because we want to be able to distinguish when she has a baby. If she becomes pregnant and has a baby, we want to know whether that baby was conceived before or after her gerus. So the 3 months is because babies might be born premature. By as much as 3 months premature, they might be born. Now, a baby might be born healthy and viable after 6 months or after 9 months. So we need that 3 months in order to be able to make that distinction. Rabbi Yossi matila oris l'nasa miyad, and Rabbi Yossi says that no, she'd be allowed to marry right away for reasons that we're going to explain soon in the Gemara. The point being that the Gemara is assuming, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel is assuming for purposes of his question that the Giyotas and the Shvuya are basically the same situation. With both of them, the concern is, did they have relations with Goyim? In the case of the Giyotis, it might have been voluntary. In the case of the Shvuya, it would have been by force. But whatever the case, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be concerned about that, and therefore he requires the Giyotis to wait for 3 months. Why are we saying that in the case of a Shvuya, are we saying that he's not concerned about that? That he's not concerned that she may have been raped by the goyim. Tosfos points out that, in other words, the point of the question is that after the Gemara is going to say soon that with a geyoris, she knows in advance that she's planning to become a geyoris. Therefore, we could say that during that time, she's more careful to avoid relationships with goyish men. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying Tzricha L'Hamtin Gimel Chadashim. Wouldn't it be all the more so in the case of a Shvuya, where she doesn't even have that ability to avoid such things because she's in captivity and she's always she's always at the mercy of the goyim who capture her. So that's the question. Then how is it that Rabbi Yochanan is saying Rabbi Yehuda would say we're not concerned at all that she was raped, when based on this it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda should be very concerned. Omale, sort of Yosef answers, still Giyotis Ashvuya Karamis. How are you bringing a contradiction between a Giyotis and a Shvuya? The difference is Giyotis Lo Mintera Nafsha, Shvuya Mintera Nafsha. The difference is that after all, Giyotis is not necessarily careful to hold herself back from having relations with Goyim. After all, she's a goita, she's allowed to at that point. So therefore, now that she became a geyoris, Rabbi Yehuda is going to require her to wait 3 months. Whereas a shvuya, fine. On the one hand, she's not free to refuse them, but on the other hand, she's going to take every possible step to avoid it, so that to avoid them raping her, and therefore we could say that Abihuda would say that not necessarily was she, and he wouldn't require her to wait 3 months, and he would say that she'd still be allowed to marry the kohen. In fact, Tosfos points out we're actually talking about earlier in the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah and earlier in the Gemara, we said that these dinim are, we're talking about a katana, a girl below the age of bas mitzvah. But so Tosfos points out you have like this. There's a point when she's very young, and she's not going to be willing to. She's not going to be willing to go along with Bia anyway. And when she gets older, then conceivably she would. But at that point, she knows already. Look, I'm a Jewish woman. I don't want to be with a goy. In particular, I don't want to lose my marriage prospect, my prospective marriage prospects with a kohen. And therefore, I'm gonna try being shomer myself, and try to avoid giving them any opportunity to take advantage of me. So even though we're talking about a katana, we can still say that that applies. Okay. But the Gemara says, V'romi shvuya shvuya. Fine, you're right. Maybe we can't bring a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion with a giyotis versus a shvuya. Maybe he would say that a giyotis is less likely to worry about the consequences of a liaison with a goyish man, because after all, she's still a goyta. It's perfectly allowed for her. And therefore, he's going to say that once she becomes a giyotis, she has to wait 3 months, fine, as opposed to a shvuya. Fine, but we can show a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about a shvuya herself. Netanya, we have another braisa. Hagiyodas vashvoya vashivcha shenifter v'shenisgaido v'shenishtachu yiseris albnos gimel shonim yemechad. Where if this woman was giyodas, who was converted, or shvoya who was freed, or shivcha who was freed from slavery, where they were older yiseris albnos gimel shonim yemechad, and they were older than 3 years old, where then again there's the concern about besulim. In all those cases, they have to wait for 3 months before they're allowed to marry a yid. Give Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. So even though we're talking about the girl who's a katana, she's not able to become pregnant, but nevertheless, we're still going to say loy plug. We're still going to say that we don't make a distinction within that zera. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that across the board, we always have the 3 month rule. Tosfos discusses at some length why that should be. And Tosfos says that maybe actually not. Maybe in fact we have a different girsa, and Rabbi Yehuda would be saying this only with a gdola who's actually capable of becoming pregnant. Anyway, and the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yossi matir la'oris v'nosim yad, and Rabbi Yossi allows her to get to be niskadish and to be meant to be married right away. He doesn't hold of the 3 months. So we see clearly that Rabbi Yehuda says that a shvuya, there is a real concern that she was raped and became pregnant. So how could Rabbi Yochanan be saying about Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah that he holds no, we don't have to be concerned about that at all, and she's even allowed to marry a kohen? Rabbi Yehuda seems to be contradicting himself. Ishtik. So Rabbi Yosef was quiet, and he didn't have an answer to that. Omalei, then he says to the Papa Bashmul, Midi Shmiya Lach Baha. Have you heard anything from your Rebbeim that might help to answer this contradiction? Amalei, so the Papa Mashmol says, Hochi Amar Rav Sheshes, Shura Ua Shinivala. Rav Sheshes says that in fact we're talking about where it's like this. We have with a Shvuya, you have a suffix maybe whether she was raped. And Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that there's no concern about that. But here we're talking about where we actually saw that she was raped by them. Now already, it's not a matter of a suffix. Now we know it's a vadai. Now the question is only if she became pregnant. That is where Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that now, once she's freed, she has to wait 3 months, because if she has a baby, we need to know whether it was from the goy or whether it was from a yid. Okay, well, the question is, Yochanan, my time with Rabbi Yossi. Well, then why does Rabbi Yossi say that she doesn't have to wait 3 months? Again, all of this is within Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. If within Rabba's opinion that we said before, that even Rabbi Yehuda says it's only a matter of choyt and nisker, then there's no question. You could say that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying it's a given that she was raped. He's just being choshish to it, and he's saying only when choyt and nisker are we going to ignore that possibility. And Rabbi Yossi would be saying that, and Rabbi Yossi maybe then. would be saying that that we're not concerned across the board. But if you renew shenivala, then why not? And the answer is Amar Rabba, Kasav Rab Yosi Ishim Zana Meshameshes B'Moich Shalai Tisaber. And the answer is Rab Yosi would hold that when a woman is Mizana, or in this case a Shvuya, was raped by the Goyim, she is going to afterwards turn over. She's going to do physical exercises to avoid becoming pregnant, to get out as much of the, or not physical exercises, that's soon, rather. Meshameshes B'Moich, she's going to have relations using Moich Shalai Tisaber, so she doesn't become pregnant. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that she'll take such steps, and therefore it's far less likely that she became pregnant. Rashi uses the expression, it means that after they had relations, she's going to use moich to wipe out the zera. Later on Daf Lamed Tes, we're going to talk about this matter of Meshameshes B'Moich. There, Rashi explains it differently. There, we're going to talk about the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos on the subject of whether it means that she uses moich to begin with. She puts in some moich in order to absorb the zera before she ever has relations versus using it afterwards to clean herself up. So here, Rashi, so further on Daf Lamed Tes, in a different context, Rashi explains that it means that she puts it in ahead of time. Here, Rashi explains it means that she puts it in after the fact in order to absorb the zera and avoid becoming pregnant. It's obviously not 100% reliable, but she's gonna make that effort. Rashi and Tosfos, we'll discuss there on Daf Lamed Tes why it is that Tosfos holds differently than Rashi. As far as the fact that Rashi says here differently, that he says that she uses it afterwards, the Chassam Sofer has an explanation on it along the lines of that here we're talking about where she doesn't know, there's no way to know in advance when they might try something with her, so therefore she really has no choice but to use moich afterwards. Anyway, so therefore Rabbi Yossi says that she is going to do that, and therefore that reduces the chances of pregnancy a great deal, and therefore we have less reason to make her wait 3 months. Okay, well then the question is, why does it apply to all three? Bishlema Giyuris, so I understand by a woman who becomes a Giyuris, given the date of the Igiuri, she knows in advance she plans to become a Giyuris. Minter Anafsha, so we can say she's gonna try to guard herself, so she's gonna make herself available, some moich, so in order to reduce her chances of becoming pregnant, because she knows in the near future she plans to become a Giyuris, and she doesn't want to have to wait 3 months after that to get married. And a Shvuya doesn't know where they're taking her in the future, so she thinks that at some point her captors may bring her to a Jewish community, and the Jews there will do pidyon shvuyim. So the same thing, she's going to be careful, even during the time that she's under their control, she's going to try to arrange herself some moich in order to avoid becoming pregnant. So we can understand why Rabbi Yossi is saying that there's a good chance of that, and therefore we don't have to worry about her being pregnant. She doesn't have to wait 3 months. And shivcha nami deshamim hibana. And in the case of a shivcha, fine, we can say that many times she'll have heard in advance from her master that he's planning to free her, and therefore, again, from then, she's going to be careful and use moich for this purpose. Ella, but we have to consider, there's various reasons why a shifcha knanis, we're talking about, of course, might be freed, might be freed from slavery. And one of them is Ella Yotze B'Shein Ba'ayim. One of them might be that if her master knocks out her eye or her tooth or any one of 24 Rosh Evarim that are listed in Gemara Kiddushin. So then that kind of thing is an all of a sudden thing. So Michael Amema, then what are you going to say? You're going to say that in advance she's using moich because she knows in the future there's going to be Shein V'ayin, she's going to go free because of that? It's impossible to know that. So why would we, and yet Rabbi Yossi is saying across the board that a shivcha does not have to wait 3 months. Why not? On the face of it, it should depend on what the circumstances were, why her master emancipated her. So you're going to say maybe in fact Rabbi Yossi would make that distinction. Maybe he would say there's a distinction between something that could have been predicted in advance versus memela, something that all of a sudden happened. No. You're going to say that maybe, in fact, Rabbi Yossi would not say his rule by Mimela. Maybe he would say that you do have to wait 3 months. No, Hare Anusa Mufuta de Mimela. Consider the case of a woman who was Anusa, who was Mufuta, which is something that also happens as an all of a sudden thing. It's not something that was pre-planned. Vitanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Anusa Mufuta Tzrichas Lahamtim Gimo Chadoshim Divir Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi Matila Orisol Anasim Yad. And we see that you have the same machloikas there, where Rabbi Yehuda says that she has to wait 3 months before she can get married, and Rabbi Yossi doesn't require it. So we see that Rabbi Yossi is not distinguishing between something that happens in Mela, something that happens as a one-off, as an all of a sudden unpredictable thing, versus something that could have been predicted. So then why not? If you're saying that it's a matter of using Moich after, then she wouldn't have known to do that because she wouldn't have known to do it. She wouldn't have known to do that because in the future she might be emancipated because of Shane Va'ayin, or because in the future she might be Anusa or Mufuta. So no, Ella Omar Rabba, Kasavar Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mizana Misapechas, Kedosh Lo Disabe. The answer is Rabbi Yossi says it's not a matter of using Moich. It's a matter of that she'll misapechas, she'll turn over, meaning she'll do physical exercises again in order to cause the Zera to leak out and avoid becoming pregnant. Now that's something that she can do. So that's something she can do even in a case of Mimela. So in other words, the idea is that even a shifcha could conceivably be doing that. She has nothing to lose by doing it, basically. The same thing, a woman who was nanas or was mafuta could do that after the onus or after the pituri, and there's a good chance that she did that. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying that we're not going to make her wait 3 months after that. The idach. So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says, Chayshin and Shemalai Nepta, Yafa Yafa. Sure, that's a possibility. But on the other hand, if we're talking about that rather than using Moich, that has a much lower likelihood of being successful unless she does it right. And she may not do it right. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda considers that there's a higher likelihood that in that case she became pregnant. So that is why Rabbi Yehuda would say that in those cases she has to wait the 3 months. As opposed to Rabbi Yossi says that she doesn't. Actually, Tosfos says that in the case of the Shifcha, who was freed because of Shein Va'ayin, even Rabbi Yossi would agree that she has to wait 3 months because she has no reason to be mishapech after at all. She has no particular reason to think that in the future she's going to be freed, that she should have to be concerned about such things. On the other hand, other Rishonim say, I think the Ritva says that even with her, she might, because look, what does she have to lose? It's not that difficult to be mishapech, and Rabbi Yossi considers that it's easy enough to do it properly, and therefore that's fine. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda is being consistent with his own opinion, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. He's saying that if we don't know that she was Nival, then we can assume that she wasn't. And Rabbi Yochanan will say, Rabbi Yehuda will say that across the board. But if we knew her, she Nival, that's when Rabbi Yehuda will say that she has to wait 3 months. Okay. The Mishnah said, Shinem of Loya Osin Onish Yonish. The second half of the Mishnah talked about where, going back to the case of Onus and Mafata, where the woman, where the girl that he was Onus or Mafata, is somebody for whom he'd be Chayav Misa. So, for example, his daughter or his granddaughter or his stepdaughter or what have you. So then, his wife's daughter, that is, then we said that then Kom Levidabimine, he's Chayav Misa, and therefore he's not paying the Knas, Shinem of Loya Osin Onish Yonish for them. Because the Pasuk says, if there's not an Osin, then he'll be penalized financially, meaning the case that we talked about where a man hits a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, where then if he didn't kill her, then he has to pay for the value of the babies, but if he killed her, then he's Potter because he's Chayav Misa. And we talked about previously the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, whether that applies only b'mezid, only when he's actually chayiv misa, or does it apply even b'shoigig, because potentially he would have been chayiv misa, etc. So the Gemara asks, "V'homa hocha nafka?" So you're telling me we learn this concept of kamle b'derabimene from that pasuk? Mehosim nafka? We learn it from an entirely different pasuk. The pasuk says kidei lishosai, that when a person gets malchus, you punish him according to his wickedness, which implies mishum risha achas atem achayver v'yatem achayver mishum shtei rishoyes. You can only be machayev him because of one wickedness, not two. In other words, from that we learn there's no double jeopardy. There's no two punishments for the same action. Now, by the way, there's a Tosfos elsewhere that points out, we're not talking about, for example, when a person was over on multiple lavim, that he shouldn't get multiple malchus. That, of course, he does. We're talking about when you have two different kinds of punishments, as in this case, misa and mamon. So from that pasuk, on the face of it, we learn that you don't do both of them. So why do we need the pasuk v'lo yasan? And the answer is, we need both of them. Chodem misa mamon, v'chodem malchus mamon. One tells us that if there's misa and mamon, as in the case over there with the pregnant woman, if he kills her, or in the case of on Mishnah, where he had relations with his own daughter. So then we're saying that we do only the misa and not the mamon. V'chodem malchus mamon. And the other one, the Kedei Rishosei, teaches us the same concept when it comes to malchus and money, that if he did something that would make him chayev malchus, as well as paying money, then he only gets malchus and doesn't pay the money, which earlier in the parak there was a discussion about that as it relates to our Mishnah. How is it not our Mishnah, but the previous Mishnah, where the previous Mishnah had said that if the woman is a mamzeres, for example, where there's malchus for having relations with her, then we said he pays the knas. So how is that? Why doesn't he get malchus instead? And the Gemara had brought up a couple of possibilities that maybe in fact he doesn't get malchus, maybe in fact he only gets malchus if there's no knas, namely she's a begeres, or maybe there's a difference whether they gave masra for the malchus or not, or maybe there's a machlokes or mayor and nachachamim on that subject, which the Gemara is going to bring again in another line. So utzricha, and in fact, the Gemara says we would need to be told two psukim. We couldn't learn one from the other. De'yeshmin and misa umamun. If we were told that concept when it comes to misa and umamun, you would say, you know why you only give him the misa and don't make him pay money? Mishum de'ikke ibud neshama. After all, he's losing his life. That's a pretty stringent punishment. So it's enough for him. It's enough kapara for him for that. You're not going to make him pay money as well. Avam malchus and mamon, the leka ibud neshama. When it comes to malchus and money, he's not losing his life. So maybe not. Maybe it's not a harsh enough punishment, and maybe we should have to make him. Maybe we should make him have to pay money as well. So the e ashmin and malchus and mamon. On the other hand, if we only have the pasuk kedei rishasay about malchus and money, you would say on the contrary, mishum b'lechomi risure. You know why you're saying you can get away with only malchus? Because it wasn't such a stringent issur. After all, we see the Torah itself was more lenient on that issur and prescribed only malchus, not misa for it. So therefore, we could say that it's enough to give him one punishment. Avam misa umamin lechomer isure, but when it comes to misa and mamin, which is a more stringent isur, it's a harsher isur. After all, we see the Torah itself is much more machmer on it. Aim aloy, so maybe not. Maybe we should be further machmer on him and make him get both penalties, the misa and the mamin. So therefore, we need both. Okay. The Gemara asks, "Olo Rav Meir d'amar loyko mashalom tauti mamali." Now we learned previously in the perek that Rav Meir says a person could get malchus and pay money. According to him, for example, in the first Mishnah of our parak, if the woman that he was ma'anes or mafata was mamzeres, then and she was a naira, then Rav Meir is going to say that he gets malchus and he has to pay the knas. So, and we discussed a couple of angles on why that would be so. But anyway, tauti lomali. So according to Rav Meir, why do we need two psukim? And the answer is chodem miso mamon, v'chodem miso malchus. Because according to him, one's talking about if a person did something that makes him chayev misa and mamon, then you only give him the misa, like it says in our Mishnah. And the other one is if he did something that makes him chayev misa, as well as the same action would make him chayev malchus, then you only give him the misa. You don't, in addition, give him the malchus. But in fact, the mayor would say that misa and that malchus and money, you would make him do both. Okay, and again, it's tzricha, and we would say, according to the mayor, you need both psukim. The iashmin and miso mamon, because again, you would say, if we were told only by misa and money, you would say, mishum b'chodeh b'gufay, b'chodeh b'mamon, eloy abdin. Maybe we can't penalize him for the same thing in two different ways, one involving his body by executing him, and the other one with his money by taking away money from him. Maybe we can't do that. Avo b'miso malchus, the idea b'idea b'gufay, but misa and malchus both involve his body. So maybe you should say, in effect, we're talking about it's like one long, one drawn out, protracted death. So maybe we should do both. Give him malchus and then follow up with executing him. So therefore, we need to be told that not. V'yeshmin and Misa Malkus, and vice versa. If we were told that about Misa and Malkus, that you only do one, you would say on the contrary, the tarot to be gufa le'avdinan. Maybe on the contrary, you can't give him two punishments that affect his own body. But Misa and Mammon, where one affects his body and the other one his Mammon, maybe you could do both to them, to him. And therefore, the mayor would say we need both psukim to tell us that. But Rameyu would still say that if it was Malkus and money, where you don't have either of those things, you can't call it Misa Richter, because after all, he's only getting Malkus, he's not getting killed, and it is two separate things, one's Malkus and one's money, then maybe you could make him undergo both of those. A few days ago, we learned that according to Rabba, maybe that would only be by Knas, and then we said that, and then we said the possibility that maybe it would apply across the board. Okay. Since we're talking about that, we have psukim that tell us about this concept of double jeopardy, and we're saying that in the case of Misa, that a person gets only Misa and not Mammon, because Kam Libidamine. So the Gemara digresses to talk about several other psukim that seem to tell us somewhat the same thing, and why do we need those psukim? So you have a pasuk that says, Volosikho Koifer Lunefesh Ritzeah. The pasuk says, don't take a koifer, don't take a payment, a monetary payment. Regarding the life of a Ritzeach. So Lomali, what do we need this pasuk for? On the face of it, we learn it from what we're saying in our Mishnah, that you don't make him pay money as well as give him Misa. And the answer is that's what it means. No, what it means is the Torah is warning you, don't think that you can take a koifer from him and that way exempt him from Misa. So that pasuk is telling us a different concept. Our Mishnah is telling us the pasuk below your osain to say that you don't do both, give him Misa and make him pay money. That pasuk, the sikhu kofer, is saying don't think that he can commute his Misa by paying money instead. No, he can't do that. Okay, what about next pasuk there continues, the sikhu kofer, lonus al umiklotoi, lomali. The next pasuk continues, don't take a kofer regarding running away to the Ir Miklat. So again, it sounds like the pasuk is saying, don't make him run away when he killed Beshogeg to the Ir Miklat, as well as send, and don't take money from him as well as for compensation, as well as send him to the Ir Miklat. So again, Lomali, what do we mean that for? Again, don't we have the various psukim we brought so far? And again, the point is, the pasuk is not saying that don't do both. The pasuk is saying, don't allow it to substitute. Don't think that you can take money from him and thereby exempt him from golos. So not just so that you don't make him do both, that we learn from also, you know, from Kedavish also, but the psukim are telling you, don't think that he can get away with money instead of Misa or get away with money instead of golos. And the Gemara says Utsricha, and we would need Utsrichi, and we need both those psukim. Again, we couldn't have learned one from the other. De'ieshmin and mezid, if we were told that by the case of a killer of a mezid, you would say, you know why? You can't commute it with a monetary payment, mishum dechomer yisure, because after all, it was a very stringent issue. He killed somebody by mezid, and he needs to be executed. Abel shogeg delechomer yisure, but a shogeg, it wasn't such a stringent issue. Aim aloy, so maybe not. De'ieshmin and shogeg, maybe you would think that you could get away with money instead of golos, because after all, it wasn't such a harsh issue. So Amaloi, so you would think that not, and the pasuk has to tell you otherwise. The Eshmin and Shogeg, and if you said it only by Shogeg, you would say again, Mishum Deleka Ibud Neshama. The fact is, so you would say, you know why? You can't commute it for money because it's not such a, after all, you're not causing the guy to lose his life. You're only sending him off to the Ori Mikvot. So therefore, we're going to say that the Torah doesn't want you to commute it for money. Let him go into Golos. We're not losing so much from that. Avul Mezid de Ika Ibu Neshama, but if he killed the Mezid, we're going to say, huh, how could we be taking his life? Shouldn't we do everything possible to save a life and therefore allow us to take money instead? So the aim alois, you would think that not, maybe you could. Suicha, and therefore the pasuk needs to tell you that don't think that way. Okay. Here's another pasuk that's relevant to this. The pasuk says, V'la oretz lo yichupar l'adom asher shubach ba. The pasuk says that the continuation from the previous pasukim says the land will not be atoned for the blood that was spilled in it. Ki in the dam shofchei, only with the blood of the one who spilled it. Meaning, in other words, that if a person killed, then he has to be executed. Nothing else can be done. So what is it? What lomali? What is that pasuk telling us? If it's telling us that you're not allowed to commute it for money, we already have that from the earlier pasuk. from Loisik Chul Kovar? And the answer is Mibole L'Chiditanya. That we use to learn a different, to learn a different din that it says in a Braisa. Now we know at the end of Parashas Shoftim, we have the mitzvah of Egla Arufa, that if we find a dead body outside the city and we don't know who killed him, then we have to measure to the nearest city and the nearest city has to bring an Egla Arufa and so forth. So now the Braisa says, Minayin Shemis Arufa Egla V'Achakach Nimsa Ahurig. How do we know that if the Egla was decapitated, the whole procedure was done, and then the killer was found, Minayin Shein Poitru Nosei, how do we know that we don't let him go free? We don't say, look, the Egla Arufa was meant for a kapara, and the kapara has been accomplished, therefore we don't need to execute the guy. No, that is why the Pasuk is saying that no, the land won't be atoned for unless the blood of the killer himself is shed. So even though the Egla Aruf has been done, nonetheless, if you find the guy, you still have to execute him. So that we learn, from this extra Pasuk. Okay, well then, the Pasuk there says that at the end of the story of the Egla Aruf, it says, you should remove the guilt of innocent blood from among you, which on the face of it means that you have to do that, you have to accomplish that by executing the killer if you find him. In fact, Tosfos points out over here that Rashi on the Pasuk says that this that we just said, that you have to kill the guy regardless, even if he did the Egla Arufa, Rashi on the Pasuk actually says we learn it from these words, Va'ata Tvar Adam Anok Nikubefa. But here the Gemara is saying differently. Here the Gemara is saying that we actually learn that from the pasuk, from a different pasuk in Parshas Maaseh, well, the oritz leyichupa l'adam asher shubach ba, and rather va'ata tivar adam anokim kibecha is teaching us a different din. So, what is that pasuk teaching us? And the answer is mibole l'chiditanya. We use that to teach us this that it says in a braisa, minayim l'mosim b'sayif shuhum ratzaber. How do we know when a person is executed by beis din, by the sword, how do we know that that has to be done by chopping off his head, by having the sword at his neck? Meaning, now you have like this. We know the Torah tells us that there are four misses beis din, and one of them, hereg, is there's two kinds of people who get hereg. One of them is a murderer, and the other one are the people of the Ir HaNidachos. So we know the Gemara learns elsewhere from Gzeira Shava that the method to be used in the case of a Ritzeach is Saif. But how do we know the Saif is to be used at the neck? Maybe, for example, you stab him in the heart or something. So Talmud Lomar va'ata tivar adam anokim mikubecha. That is why you have this pasuk regarding the Egla Arufa, meaning hukshu kol shayf chedamim la Egla Arufa, meaning the Torah is giving you a hekesh between murder and the Egla Arufa. Mala halam minat saber. So just like the Egla Arufa, how is it killed? By decapitating it, by chopping off its head. Af shayf chedamim minat saber. That is where we learn that the shayf chedamim has to be executed by chopping off his head. Well, then, in that case, if you're going to learn like that, then you should say that it should be exactly the same. By the Egla Arufa, you don't use a regular sword or knife or something. You use a koifetz, which is a cleaver, the kind of thing that's used by butchers to chop up meat and bones. And umimul odef, and you're supposed to do it on the back of the neck of the animal. Oref in and of itself means the back of the head. Mul oref means the area below that, means the back of the neck. So afkan the koifetz and mul oref. Maybe then the equation would be that when we give somebody the misa of hereg means the same thing. They have to use a koifetz and they have to do it on the back of the neck. And in fact, we know it's not like that. In fact, instead they use a sword and they do it from the front of the neck. So why not? So why the difference? Amr of Nachman, Amr of Bavur. Because because after all, the pasuk says and even this guy who's being executed is re'echa, because after all, his misa is machapa for him. Therefore, from that we learn that you always have to choose the easiest and least disfiguring possible death for him within the kind of death that the Torah says to give. So therefore, so Rashi explains when you use a sword and you chop off his head from beginning from the front, then he dies faster than he would if you use the koifetz and you did from the back. So therefore, so that's misa yafa. The Shittim Kubetzis brings over here a couple of possibilities from one of them being brings from the Yad Ramah, who says similar to Rashi that it's a faster and cleaner kill more so than a kofitz, which really disfigures the neck and the head. And the other possibility the Shitim Kubetzis brings is that using a kofitz is more it's not so much what the kofitz does to the body versus a sword, but it's more a matter of that it's a degrading thing to use a kofitz, which is something that you use to kill on the chop of animals. So that's why we say because of the is why we say that the killing of the Ritzeach is not exactly like the Egla Arufa, but still from the Pasuk, we learn that it has to be in the same general area of the body, namely the neck. And Tosfa says, still, because after all, otherwise you would say that, for example, you stab him in the heart. That would also be Misa Yafe. He's going to die awfully quickly from that. But that wouldn't be that. Then you wouldn't have the equation with the Egla Rufa. So therefore, that's why we come out with that it means beheading him, but it means doing from the front of the neck rather than from the back. Okay, and the Gemara is going to continue with a couple of other psukim that talk about these various dinim and what we learn and what we learn from those dinim. But that will continue in tomorrow's Shia Bez Hashem.